Blog Talk Radio.
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Blue Otter. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Blue Otter, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho. This is your good buddy, Will Blue Otter. We've got some really interesting guests this evening. Bishop Daniel Clay, who is affiliated with the Mexican National Catholic Church, who is Catholic but not Roman Catholic. There is a difference. And we have Chief Charles L. Lohi Kingfisher Rogers, M.D., oncologist, and the Principal Chief of the Cherokee Nation of Mexico. And my good friend... Mark the Badger Borcherding, and the mics are live, and I'm going to shut up and let you guys talk.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you, Otter, and thank you for being on the show, Bishop. We have a lot of ground to cover. It's absolutely fascinating. My first question is, just so I can try to catch up on the whole backstory, the Mexican area that your church came from, and this is just a curious thing for me because I'm really curious because in Acapulco where we used to live, the Black Fleet from the Philippines used to come to Acapulco, and they would unload their ships and then carry all their cargo, and it was all very, very high-dollar stuff, silks and what have you. They would carry it across the mountains into the Valley of Mexico, and then they would move it on to a Gulf port, whichever one was most secure. And they changed from year to year where they would sail out of, and then the Spanish fleet would take it on to Spain for the crown. And so I always found it interesting that we had many Philippine plants on the Pacific coast of Mexico that had been brought in because when they were going across, they would take Mexican stuff to Mexico, and a great number of people that were slaves of that time period in the Philippines escaped in Acapulco, many of them during a hurricane in which one of the ships was going down, and they had everybody on deck trying to help. And to make a long story short, the Philippine friends that you have, I know that the Philippine Church has separate agreements, ancient agreements, with the Vatican, as does the Greek. And so is any of that Mexican concept of the Mexican church in allowing a bailiwick, for lack of a better term, or a sphere of existence and operation. What was the history on that? I'm not thinking it does connect that way. I don't know, but anything is possible because that's the crossroads of the world.
It was actually founded by the Spanish and the archdiocese that became the Mexican National Church, and that archdiocese was founded in 1649.
Mm-hmm.
Separated during the Civil War.
Mm.
And as a result, it's the Mexican National Catholic Church to honor those who gave their lives during the war itself. But it was accepted. It was part of the Roman Church. It split. Most of the Roman Church sided on the wrong side of the Civil War.
Right.
This became the National Catholic Church in Mexico. Then after the war, money was funneled into Mexico, and the Roman Church reestablished its dioceses, with the exception of this one, which remained independent. And, by the way, covered an area that is now part in Mexico and part in Texas.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely have no doubt of that. One of the first battles of that war was called the Battle of Medina, and it was here in Texas, of all places, for the Civil War to start here, because we were just an outpost.
Then the ties to the Philippines came when the Mexican National Catholic Church became part of the Worldwide Communion of Catholic and Apostolic Churches, of which Brazil, the Brazilian Catholic and Apostolic Church, is a member. The Philippines also have a church. There are several churches scattered throughout South America with multiple millions of people. I think about 5 to 10 million in Brazil, something roughly the same number probably in the Philippines. But that is where that tie comes in, and the patriarch of the Brazilian church, before he died, made the Mexican National Catholic Church the custodian of the Worldwide Communion of Catholic and Apostolic Churches.
Wow. It's a great honor, but it makes perfect sense when you see the history of it.
Yes, it does.
Mexico is a very interesting place. We have within our tribe documents that are original that go back to the 1640s. Odd that you picked that up from Spain, in which we and three other tribes are granted the property that they have.
Oh, that is absolutely fabulous. Am I mistaken in thinking that some of the Cherokee Nation actually moved to Spain and were entitled as nobility within?
Well, there's an awfully good chance that the ruling families that you would find within the Mayan and the Aztec. That ran their kingdoms because of their language and because of certain words that we use that they use. However, because of the Hebrew that we use, they're not sure. Well, they knew what they were saying, but they did not know the roots and what became the Cherokee tribe after the people from the saltwater landed in Panama, after having come to an island which was unoccupied. And the migration legend is that we traveled across land a long time. That would be probably 7 to 9 years. Otherwise, we would have broken it down from seven down we would have said what it was. And so when we came to the ocean, we made rafts and ships, and we departed, and we came to an island, and there we lived until the Olmec people came from the rubber tree forest, and we fought with them, and then we fought to a standstill, and we left for the mainland where the two oceans meet, and there that's where they married into Native Americans and became a tribe of mixed culture and mixed people. The name of God, Yohiwa, we use, and the only other time it's used is between 200 and 300 years before Christ. It was the name of the second name of God. The first name, Yohewahi, meaning he exists, it's a title. It comes from the third day of Genesis, as you well know, in which the sun came up and the sun set, and Yohewahi.
It is amazing, is it not, how many people use God's name in vain without being aware. They go, I, or I, they. Being totally unaware of the Kabbalistic inert nature of the names,
right,
and from whence they derive.
Oh, unreal.
Let me interject something. Moctezuma's family...
Moctezuma's family, did become nobility. The probability that the royal family of the Aztecs, who were using root words from our core religious language along with the Mayans, their word is Chachin in Hebrew for Passover, and it was Cha and Cha for the Mayan, and it was a week of festivities in which they put up tables in the wilderness, and instead of putting cloths over the wilderness, over the top of the tables in the wilderness, as was done in ancient Passover, like you would be in the garden, as Christ was in the garden the week of Passover. And that was the Passover feast, the Last Supper. It brought them all together. But the Mayans have it to where they cover the tops with plants and palms and everything else that they can get their hands on. But it's the identical practice. Yet the Mayans had no idea where it came from. They practiced it, and they said everybody says, well, this word came to us, and so forth and so on, as is done in Christianity through Jesus. So as the word comes down, when you hear it and where you hear it determines a lot about where you think you came from. Now we know that we crossed the ocean and we came from the salt water, and some large religions even have syllables of our meaning. The Church of Latter-day Saints, their common name is Mormon, and it was multitude of people. You have to always read it from right to left in Hebrew, and so the Mon part is a multitude of people. The R part is a man among men. So it's a multitude of people crying out for a man among men from the salt water, which means that we were the ones seeing these people come ashore. And so we had a word in Cherokee for fresh water, Ama, and then we had salt water was Mo, M-O. And the same thing with Egypt in Moses, a child that was a gift from the water. Mo being they use the last syllable because the Hebrews basically took that Egyptian syllable for water, fresh water, and put it on there. But when we used Mo, we used it as salt water because these people came from the salt water to us, establishing their immigration reflected in our religious language. So, yeah, we feel that we could take the Mayans, the Kwame of the coast of the Pacific that ran from Mexico down to Bolivia. There's two or three places right south of there, about 800 miles off in the mountains, which have some of our language. Going to the north, by the time we got into the headwaters of the Ohio, we had contact with four other tribes fairly extensively. Our young men would go on, the modern term would be walkabout, but it was required of the young men to go and walk usually around 400 to 800 miles and come back. And then when they were older men, they would tell the young men going out that year how to go and what tribes they would encounter and who to say that we knew. And it was not that different from the Mormon practice of sending two people out now. And it was missionary practice by any other terms, which started way back in the Middle East.
Very close to the Aboriginal practices in Australia as well, and there seems to be very good proof that they came from the Middle East, migrated through India, and possibly sailed over.
Yeah, if you're from anybody in Europe, you're from the Middle East.
Well, the Aboriginal DNA was fairly recently found in down around Tierra del Fuego, so. Maybe all were, even when,
the Pacific Island people working before, their way across. Two people in Chile, two women in Chile that were sisters, that their DNA tested the same as the people of Tonga and such like that. And then, I mean, they were like 500 miles from Tierra del Fuego. And here they were, native people living there. And when they did their DNA, there was two sisters that still had this DNA from the South Pacific people who had come from the main body over in Asia that had worked their way down from the Middle East. It's amazing the
and then the Japanese pottery that was found and the DNA was found down in Peru also. There's all kinds of people coming and going.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Peru has a love of Japanese people, as a matter of fact.
It seems very evident in many respects when people talk about races that there really aren't races.
No.
Is the race, the human race. When people talk about races, what they're really talking about is something that no longer exists, which is species. The Homo erectus, Homo sapien, the Donovan man, and the Neanderthalness, which, by the way, they have found now that the DNA from even these various species that most of us carry mixed DNA, that the bigger part of people have Neanderthal DNA and a little bit of this DNA and some unidentified DNA. So we're all one big race. There's really not a...
There's no such thing. The Cherokee said that coloration was a gift from God because the child determines the color of the parents. A child that is the wrong color for his environment. If he's born in the woods or the jungles, he must have a dark skin in order not to be seen in the shadows. The child of the sand is brown, and the child of the snow is white. And this in ancient times, this kept predators or enemies from seeing them. And if their color was correct, then there was a parent actually would come from that child that could procreate during their generation. So that color was what was necessary for the family of humankind to be established, and it's a blessing. Now we kind of say in our arrogance these days that that was provincial, that was good then, but what does that have to do with the price of rice today? Well, it may have a lot to do with it before it's over with. We're not sure who we need to make sure that the future goes correctly. The assumption that color is irrelevant and talents connected to the colors, who knows what we need, but we know what got us here, and we know that that's a proven, we're here, in spite of all the things that could happen, we have survived, and so we're here, and that was a successful formula. You can't argue with success. So racism is just so peculiar that people don't see design in creation, because it's all I can see. I'm blinded by seeing the design of creation. Here in our part of Texas, we have cedar trees, which are really juniper trees. They're very hard wood, like ebony, and they're slow growers. But, you know, if you could speed time up, like do a future film run forward, these trees, as all trees do, they're mobile. They walk. And they put out a seed, and they travel over mountains and hills, and they travel thousands of miles. The pine belts in the south are all things that started somewhere. And even our trees walk.
Interesting fact, I live on the Cumberland Plateau, which is the ancient home of the Onontiquilaski. It was a high plateau where our Cherokee people could see for a long way. Well, if you look at the history of Tennessee, there was no trees up here on this plateau back when the settlers were coming in. That's only 250 years ago. Now, you can't find a place that isn't covered with pines and deciduous forest here. It's amazing.
Yeah. Even the trees walk. And so we have all the life forms in motion. And if that's not design, if that's not enough evidence for design, as opposed to coincidence, you know, this dislike of evolutionist of the word creation and creation of the word evolution is nonsense. Creation it does evolve. It does so by design. If not, it would be extinct.
Very well said, because evolution is the process of creation. And although there is truly never nothing, for nothing must be something, so when something was created from nothing, it was created from the something that was nothing. But even understanding
that... Bishop, you're so right on that. We have two choices in this world. One is we believe in magic, in which something came from nothing, or we can choose that something came from something, which we have a lot of evidence for out the window. There's a lot of evidence where things have come from, but then it's always been, and whatever made it has always been, and so that's our choices. We can take magic, that something came from nothing, or we can take the mystery. And the mystery has a ton of evidence behind it saying that it's so, because we've never seen something from nothing, but we can't find anything that exists in creation that didn't come from something.
You know, sometimes I think where people actually get into the problem with the whole concept is they do want to talk about then or the past, instead of realizing that there really, truly, only is present, that time doesn't exist as we understand it, because time is simply our chosen units of measurement.
That's right.
Past, present, and future is all existent as one.
I agree 100%. You know, it's time can be stretched or compressed by the individual. As we get older, we compress it, and time is stretched when we're young because we're moving slower. But as we increase our speed in how we think, then time increases its rapidity too. And so when you hear the common phenomena of people saying, wow, time just really goes fast since I was such and such an age, or usually I certainly could be wrong here, I find that time seems to become more rapid to the individual, not just perceived, but literally more rapid to them when they start obtaining not knowledge, but wisdom from doing things. Knowledge is memorization. It's facts and details and blah, blah, blah. Wisdom actually comes from having done something, chosen to do something, thought something, took a stand, took a position, became something, took on a mission, underwent
You're saying it all. A wise man with little knowledge is a gift to the universe. A knowledgeable man with a little wisdom is a disaster to everything that is touched.
Yeah. And that is the problem, is that this world is for us to gain wisdom. We're supposed to, by trial and error, get out there and get with it and learn better. We would be of little use in any afterlife without having something that could be a foundation that could be built upon by a rectification after our worldly life.
Sadly, we're of little use in this life if we do not attain some wisdom.
Oh, my goodness.
This life is just a job interview for the next, is the way I look at it.
Yeah, well, the next job is really something. But this one's not bad. This is a great planet to be on. Great, everything on here, I can't find anything that is destructive in its creation. Everything that is in creation is supportive of us becoming wiser beings. If you build your house over an earthquake zone, don't be surprised when it falls in on you. So that not moving out of the earthquake zone is man not having wisdom. They like the bishop pointed out, they may have knowledge of where the earthquake zone is, but they didn't get the wise part.
Instead, they thought they would change the way they build things rather than build things in a different place. And if it wasn't for the few holy people that decided to stay there and pray for them, there would have already been catastrophes.
Yeah, already.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah, there's. Yeah.
Bishop, help us to understand this. What would you really wish to accomplish without parameters? If you had I know you have many missions. I mean, I know you're absolutely have an interest in a great many things, all of them good. Which one is your favorite? I would hope that someday I will accomplish this. What would that be?
Well, I'm not going to give you a favorite. I am going to give you what I believe to be the purpose for my life. And that is to empower people to bring them to the awakening of the spirit, not individuals, because it is very easy to awaken an individual. But we need a shift of consciousness, a shift of understanding, a shift of the spirit in the masses of people that are on this earth. It has to start somewhere, and that is just bringing them up and enabling them to recognize the divinity within, to be filled with the spirit, and to act on that. Because this world and the government systems and the ecosystem and the, all that is occurring to destroy the earth, again, that's government, that's people, that's greed, that's raping and pillaging, that's the destruction of the ecosystem. All of that comes from people not listening to the inner voice, the inner spirit that's calling, saying, stop, don't do this, do this. And they say, yeah, but I can not do this a little later after I've earned enough money to be comfortable enough to do something else so I don't really have to listen to that little voice. You have to listen to that little voice or your earth is going to be taken out from under you.
No, it's we have seven eras. Fourth era was the time of the childhood of humankind, in which we could not be warned as an infant or told, threatened with punishment for disobeyment in the earliest times, but we could begin to be spoken to, in which we believe that Jesus, God's great teacher, came to earth and was able to perceive. As Isaiah says, Isaiah says in 55:8-9 says, God does not think like you, nor does God talk like you. As high as the heavens are above the earth, God is above you. Well, the spirit, as you're saying, is the perceivable part of God within the world of humankind, and so that but you can't. You can't perceive it unless you use your spirit, and that's exactly we're exactly on the same page there. Because if you don't choose to listen with your heart, soul, and mind, then you'll be just using your mind in order to gain wealth or enslave somebody for allegiance or power or all the mammon things that are done through history.
Most people don't realize how much they are enslaving others.
Oh, yeah.
Slavery is not a thing of the past.
Of the past. No,
if you are wearing diamonds, and those diamonds were dug out of a mine where there was abuse and labor and death as a result, then you are guilty of contributing. If you're wearing clothes that are less expensive because they're made somewhere where people must work long hours, they have to leave their family, you're guilty of that destruction of family life. If you are heating your house with something that's being dug out of the earth and is taken away from it and is not being renewed, or is possibly, such as oil, pulling the cushions out between the plates so suddenly there's nothing to buffer it from earthquakes and volcanoes, you're guilty of being part of what's causing the problem. And most people don't want to say, oh, my comforts are part of the problem.
No, you're completely right, Bishop. The awakening, at least we feel, and it sounded a lot like what you were saying. The awakening comes that the master lessons were given, in which they were commandments to our childhood, but to us, at least in our thinking. as soon as we had a coming of age of 2,000 years, and then in 45, they set off an atomic bomb. 43 was the actual year that the first nuclear weapon went off. It was on the North Sea Island by Germany. It was a small one. And but they had beat us by a year and a half to testing. And they were making the big one when we were able to stop them from making heavy water by sabotaging their transport of such. But our point being, as soon as we opened that era in which we could kill ourselves by our intelligence without the wisdom to handle it, then that's when we see it as the age of responsibility, the era of humankind's responsibility. In other words, we were created, we were in an infant state. We were like most infants, needed to be threatened with some type of punishment, not to do the wrong thing, not to go out in traffic, so to speak. And then when we were old enough for formal teaching, it came at great cost to the teacher. And so by the time we got through our age of coming of age, we entered the age of responsibility in the 1940s, of all things.
The last century and in the coming century or this century, you have basically a transition period because we're going from one age to another. And just
That's right.
as you had terrible upheaval in the time of the Christ, so mm-hmm. you've got that same upheaval now. And too many people want to say, oh, it's the end of the world, the end of the world, the end of the world. Well,
no,
there
not.
Is the end of an age, the end of an era.
That's right.
We're coming into a new era, a new time, which can be wonderful, just as the last one could have been wonderful. But what happens is people want to hold on to that past. For example, you know, when the people of Israel came out of Egypt, they wanted to hold on to what was in Egypt. They wanted the era of Taurus. They wanted the bull. Then when Jesus, the Christ, ushered in the new era of grace, the first thing that you see, now, if you look at the ancient crucifixes, if you look at the cross that is being worn by Pope Francis, you will see that it has the Good Shepherd on it, which is the oldest known depiction of the Christ. The earliest communities pictured him as the Good Shepherd, carrying his sheep, surrounded by a flock. But we immediately drug that back to the sacrificial era, and you will see that most crucifixes have the crucified Christ on them. Now
you're right, and allow me to just jump in, because what you said, I don't want to lose it. The within the Cherokee progression, we were Chalangi, Laan, because we didn't have the M letter in our language when we were first converted from the people who came from the salt water. And then we were Chalangi for several hundred years, and that was the people of the high mountains who were shepherded by God, as in Ra. Remember, from you said you're Egyptian, and so we still had that going on. But the first thing we were was that we were shepherded by Lan. And in Hittite, if you take a look and look up shepherd and look up sheep, they're very similar words in Proto-Hebrew. And so the progression that you're citing in the crucifix is reflected in our language in exactly the same order.
And now this era that we're transitioning into, people are wanting to hold on to the past era, but we're transitioning into such a wonderful era that could have so much potential because it is the era of love and wisdom. But what will people do with it? Where will they take it? Will they hold on and come in just dragging their feet and kicking and screaming like a little child being led into a feast? Or will they look and go, oh, what a bounty is ahead of me, and actually for once make the leap and everybody prosper from the potential that this new era has to offer?
Well, we both see the new era. And when I said that we entered it in the 40s, the 1940s, because it's the first time in the history of the world that our immaturity could make us extinct. And so our mind at least had come of age, but our wisdom and our heart and our soul, not so. And so thus, when you look at the what's missing to complete that, we have this childlike teaching, which it was taught to children. Jesus basically, regardless of their age, the people that he spoke to were but children in their worldly knowledge. They had no idea. If you were to even, you know, the average Greek could explain where he was at in the country states around him and the city states around him. The Romans could do that. The Celts knew who was up and down the Europe and the various tribes, and in the Holy Land, the desert dwellers knew probably the least, and so for them to listen to Jesus he had to make childlike parables for them to understand. But the biggest mystery is that the teachings came once and they'll come again, because we are hearing them with the ears of people who have come of age. And so our understanding, like what you're saying tonight, Bishop, did not exist within the priests of Israel of old. They would not have a clue what you were saying. Everybody at that time.
Always someone in every generation. There was always someone that had the knowledge, that preserved the knowledge. There were the Ezekiels, the Isaiahs. These people were there as a
They were
light.
Able to perceive the spirit that you were speaking of earlier. They had the gift of perception of God's spirit. And thus they when they looked at things, they saw it entirely different. The oddest thing is, Bishop, in your explanation of this, and it's a wonderful thing, and congratulations for your perceptiveness, is that you don't hear world leaders speak of this, but you hear people like you and I, we feel the vibe completely, and it's distinct. And it doesn't need history. It's good to have it, and we've got it, and you guys have it. But it's not necessary. Like you said, today is today. But yet the vibe is today, and so we know that there's a race on right now as to are we going to continue with Mammon, or are we going to be creationally evolved? Start to evolve more, and if so, when Jesus said, "I bring unto you the master commandments, to love others as thyself, and to love thy God with all thy heart, soul, and mind." Well, to love others as thyself was predated in world literature by a Plato of all people, but to love thy God with all thy heart, soul, and mind virtually did not exist anywhere, and after Jesus didn't exist for 800 years again until it was taught among Hebrews by a rabbi in 810, in Turkey, I believe. And so here were these keys given to us, but they were given to us as in the form of what a child could understand. Now, in the 67 war, Golda Meir said that they asked her, when will there be peace in the Middle East? And she said, well, there'll be peace in the Middle East when the Arabs love their children as we love our children. Well, Jesus would have never said that. What he was saying was that you should love the other person's children. And there isn't a human on earth that doesn't react to somebody doing something beneficial for their child.
So now we are going to go to a place that is very politically incorrect. But loving children is an absolute foundation of society.
Of world peace.
And when you take within a society and start making infanticide or abortion a part of that society, you make things very dangerous because you cut the bond of parents loving children, because mm-hmm. children are then seen as a burden rather than a gift. And for example, if you take the year after Roe versus Wade occurred, there was a fivefold increase in infanticide or people killing their children 5 years and under of age. Now, that's a huge jump. What caused all of a sudden there was a disrespect for life? Now, if you disrespect the lives of your own children that much, how are you going to love your neighbor as yourself when this starts to become a built-in part of society?
Well, you're correct. It is the key to understanding Jesus' entire mission. There wasn't anything that he said in which he said this is the master commandment. He just had one. And that actually makes it the 11th commandment. The first commandment of the New Testament, number 11 for the book, many things were said as commandments in many of the prophets' writings. But as far as God having said something or Jesus having said something using the word commandment, and it was exactly that. But anybody would know that when you love others as yourself, you're talking about as you love your children, as you have respect for yourself, so forth and so on. But that is the key, and the coloration, our ignorance, our mammon ignorance of coloration and its place in creation's evolution, and it's a good thing, because everybody of any color got here by that color having been correct for their lineage, when it first came into being, and then as it migrated to different places and it changed in its coloration, it was necessary for survival. Well, more necessary for survival is what you're citing, that we have got to start loving people, loving their children as we love our children. There's not going to be peace on earth until that's done.
Children are the hope for tomorrow. We have to love children. And bringing this around just a little bit, if you look at some of the prophecies which came from the Native American people, mm-hmm. that the children of coming generations after the onslaught from Europe had basically destroyed their society, that the coming generations would be the ones to save possibly the entire earth.
I say exactly as you. The children are the salvation of the parents. If their coloration was right, we survived. If we can love the children of the other people who could be our enemies. In other words, what's less expensive, to make a bunch of swords or to make a bunch of plowshares? Either way, it's a cost. But we get peace from the second one,
and
then we get continuous war from the first.
And famine.
Can I interject something here?
Yeah.
Dave Rogers, on your talking about Jesus and the commandment there, you know, it's interesting to read when he gave that commandment at the Last Supper up in the cenacle room. But he also explained a little bit more about it afterwards. And I think it's in the book of John, says it really well in chapter 14. But he takes it a little bit further. He says, I and the Father are one. And then he says, and this in John 14 somewhere, I forget what verse, he said that many times in the book of John, but in that particular chapter, he added a little bit more that's really important. He says, I and the Father are one. I am in you, and you were in me. So he took it a step further, and he said that, you know, whatever you
we're
did
made,
to the least
of
my brethren, you did it to me.
Yeah, that's right.
So what he's saying is, everything is so intricately connected. And right now our science, or quantum science, is telling us with the thing of a hologram. You can take a hologram, a three-dimensional hologram, a holographic image. You can break that image into thousands of pieces of glass. And each glass, each fragment, will have the entire picture. Under this understanding now, we can understand that every fragment, every piece of the creation has the entire creation within it, which means...
Yeah, it's one thing. It's just
anytime
one thing.
You do something to somebody else, you are literally doing it to yourself and
everybody
else.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
That's an absolute amen.
And here we have, you know, Jesus was a complex person. He had one thing he said that was very interesting. He said he was talking shop with the disciples, for lack of a better term. And he said, if you go to the synagogue, do not place your offering upon the altar, but set it on the floor, and then think of who you have had words with within that temple. And if you remember that you've had words with somebody of that temple, then go over those words and make sure that you haven't offended somebody. If you have offended them, go immediately to them and put it straight. And then return to the temple and put your offering upon the temple, upon the altar, because at that point the priest will have authority, police power authority, over you. As soon as you place it on top of the altar, they have police power. And if there's been a complaint waged against you, Jesus said that they can call the soldiers to come, and I promise you this, he said, he ended it, he said, I promise you this, that you will have spent every copper penny you have before you gain freedom again. And so we had one time he was talking like a lawyer. Another time these people have said this about you. What are you going to do? He said, well, I could bring them here and put them on their knees, put their throats at my knees as I sit, and I could cut their throats. So he lived in a time where if you misspoke yourself, literally misspoke yourself, you could be killed before the sun went down.
Well, that's a true now, meaning of eye for an eye is money damages. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He was from an area that had a large Essene population, and the Essene people did not even have pointed knives in their house for food. They had rounded, unpointed knives. So when the Romans came, or any occupying force came, they saw these people as no threat, because they were Jesus's brother Frank is alleged to have been an Essene. Jesus himself was said that diet was unimportant because he was there not teaching the infants what to eat in the time of Daniel, but he was there to teach. This is how you're going to come of age, and this is what you've got to do when you come of age to establish the peace of God within the world of humankind's dominion. And so that he was on a mission, and he had to be very specific
You bring up diet here, and this is a very interesting thing because so many people want rules and regulations. They want to follow the rules and traditions of the church or the rules and the traditions of whatever religion they happen to practice. And the truth of the matter is when you eat, the food you eat is sanctified by actually being partaken of by you. If you're holy, that means what enters into you becomes holy by virtue of your connection to the divine. If you are profane, that means that whatever enters into you comes profane by virtue of your denial of the divine. And when people talk about praying and ritual and their time worshiping, well, that's because they're compartmentalizing their life as if one little part of their life, an hour a week or 5 minutes a day for prayer or meditation, can be it. But the truth of the matter is every waking and sleeping moment is prayer, is meditation, is worship. And how you conduct yourself in every waking and sleeping moment, and I do add sleeping to that, dictates how
you're
actually worshiping,
yeah.
Not the 5 minutes a day you think you spend praying.
No, of course not. No, no, you're so right, Bishop. In physics, nothing touches anything. And so when it does, it makes a loud noise because it blows up. If you put if you knock on a door, that sound is coming from the force field around your atoms hitting the force field around the atoms of the wood and the varnish, and there's no true touching. If you were to split an atom, of course it'd blow up the house that you were trying to get into, and with you and most people on the block would be gone too. So. What this means to what you said is correct, because if your force field, and this sounds New Age, but it's actually not, it's astrophysics, if when you take a medication, it doesn't touch your body. The force field off of it reacts to the force field within your body, and thus if you take an antibiotic and you have a bacterial infection, and the force field is out of control because of the bacteria, and you take an antibiotic with water, you swallow it, it dissolves, it goes into your blood, and as it touches the force field of the bacteria, it kills the bacteria. Its force field kills this one. If you think negative, you make a peptide in your brain of that thought automatically, whether you want to or not, and it cruises through your body trying to find a place to react with whatever it is that you need to do. If you're angry, then the peptides will go and go immediately in all directions, and all your endocrines and everything will set you up for combat and in a warlike manner, or you could be in a peaceful-like manner too, depending upon what you're thinking. Exactly as the bishop said.
Oh, you're talking
the force that you're talking about moving through is why faith healing works. It's why hands-on healing works.
Absolutely.
It's why prayer at a distance works. And those negative and positive thoughts are creative forces.
Well, you're
They are physical medicines, literally.
Well, you're talking nuclear resonance here. And since we now know that 70% of the matter in the universe is dark matter, now we're beginning to understand how God, wherever he is, across whatever galaxies, is in instant communication with everything everywhere at once, because all magnetic fields are intertwined.
Connected.
It's real simple.
That's right.
Hey, listen, you guys want to take a little pause for the cause, about 9 minutes, and then we'll come back?
Well, what I'll have to do, and I apologize, is as you well know, I was talking to a person about a problem that they had. I'm gonna have to sign off. I want to thank you, Bishop, for it's been delightful. It's been so nice speaking with you.
It's been all my pleasure. Have a joyous and blessed
evening.
I think
our brother who brought up the last half of that, the emphasis put on John, that we are one in the same. Absolutely, if people would think like that, as the Bishop said, if people would get it and quit being a mammon that was made with less instincts than the animals, so that we had the ability to by trial and error find wisdom during our earthly life, so that we could be of use to get that foundation. If they would just start thinking like both of you said, we would have a different world. I think the key is that we should love the other person's children. John Lennon said this, and he said what we need to do is declare peace, not declare war. Next time there's a conflict, declare peace on the other country.
Yeah.
and launch our peace brigades. To build schools and treat children with medicines and give them a better life, I promise you those people will not raise a hand to us.
Yeah. And maybe next time we get together, we can talk about what you and I were talking about Yahiwa, the original name of God.
If you can talk the bishop into it, that would be a wonderful thing. That would be so enlightening.
Because it's a real revelation that, you know, the Cherokee, I mean, we're revealing to the world here soon that the Cherokee priesthood can only be one thing, because we've only ever used one name of God. And the
we've only had one name for God. We've always had. Yep. We didn't know who the first priest was, but we knew the second priest in his name. We knew Samuel second by heart about how to build priest houses to spread the faith, to build a firm house, and that the priest would come. The promise of God to the priest. That the build your house firm, for the priest will always come.
And we've always called ourselves keepers of the fire. And in First Maccabees, talks about the keepers of the fire leaving. I mean, it's part of the.
We have so much with our Catholic bishop here. We have so much in common. I think it'd be a wonderful show. And Bishop, I hope you would consider. I know you're busy, but I hope you would consider giving us your thoughts in that show, because I have loved being on tonight with you guys.
It would be an absolute joy to be on with you again.
Okay, and our Bible reader who catches the errors and the expansions, make sure he's there too, Otter.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, let's take let you go, Chief. Let's listen to Rolling Thunder talk about the unity of man and nature. And it's 9 minutes and 21 seconds, and then we'll come back and
And incidentally, as Otter well knows, when I discovered where I was going to be have knowledge of the tomb of Sequoia, he was our Moses out of the captivity of the United States to the freedom of Mexico. I called a PhD at the University of Texas who spoke Spanish and knew Mexico well, as we did, and he had done a lot of digs in Mexico and knew how to get around the government so that he could get all the necessary permits. And Bishop, this is the most interesting thing, Rolling Thunder had called him and asked would he help bring the body of Sequoia back to the Cherokees in the United States. And he said, oh, sure, I would love to do that. He's the most well-known, he was either half Welsh and half German and half Cherokee. We're not sure about the spelling of his name, or we would know whether it was German or Welsh. But anyway, to make a long story short, and so this professor said, do you know Rolling Thunder? And I said, yeah, just at a distance, and of course I'm familiar with his work, and because he used to open in the early days for the Rolling Stones and the Grateful Dead and such. So anyway, he goes, well, it's very odd you called me, because 3 years ago Rolling Thunder called me and he asked me the very same question, and I said, yes, I would, just like I just told you. Because I was thinking that that's probably the proper thing to do. I didn't know any better. And so what should happen, but that day, Rolling Thunder dropped dead.
Yep.
That he called the guy at the University of Texas. And so
January 97.
So the day I called the guy, I had gotten up in the middle of the night and something struck. I'm pretty in pretty good shape, and I don't have any health problems. I take no medicines. Something knocked me to the floor in the darkness. I mean, just like wham. I've never had that in my life before or after. But when I got off the ground, I pretty much understood that I probably, most definitely, was not going to move somebody's body out of its grave back to anywhere.
Sound like you wrestled with the same angel that Jacob had a problem with.
Let me tell you, man, I'm pretty tough. I can break coconuts, ass Otter, with my hands.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you bring me a coconut, I'll break it with my hand. So something really happened to me. And I did get off the floor, and I felt grateful that I got off the floor, but I absolutely said, well, I wonder if this is, I didn't say, huh, I said, this is an exact parallel to what happened to Rolling Thunder. I assure you, God, that I'm not moving anybody anywhere. And we were to find out, once we found the tomb and the cave, we were to hear a prophecy from a person in the darkness when my son found the marks on the wall of the word grandfather written in the syllabary of in the Cherokee language, written on the wall. And there was 20 adults in that cave looking, and we wore our flashlights out. We wore our cell phones out. Then we wore out our torches that we had made. We were on our last torch, and my son, who was about 12 or 13, then found the carving. And there it was. And then his torch went out, and one of the elders said, "So the prophecy is true that a child would come and take his spirit back to his people so they could be united." First time I'd ever heard that. And so Sequoia was completely against living in bondage. And that was in our blood, not to be in bondage, period, because people had married into us who had been in bondage from ancient times, and we knew the difference, and we knew not to bond people either, and we didn't. Some did in the States. Some had bad habits and decided to try to become Europeans of some sort, and then then but you know, Europeans weren't necessarily slave owners. Here in Texas, 3/4 of the Texas voted for slavery. 1/4 voted not to. That was the quarter from Germany. And the Germans said when they were told you can have slaves as human slaves, the Germans would ask why, because they had come from serfs themselves and would not have anything to do with it. But making that whole story end so that Otter can get about his work, the many things have happened that are not within the physical realm. I know as a bishop you've seen many, many things happen your whole lifetime, things that you've witnessed, things that you've done. We walk in the same path. We've seen things and heard things and know things, all manner of things. It's what you do with them is, I believe, the test of our times.
We will agree with you full-heartedly.
Well, bless
absolutely.
You guys, and health be within you, and the sooner we can do this again, the more it's going to be wonderful. Thank you so much, Bishop. Thank you, brothers. Everybody, thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Now, wusta uku yatlohi. Well, we're going to be back in 9 minutes and with a little bit more of talking with Bishop Daniel Clay. And right now, let's listen to Rolling Thunder talking about the unity of men and nature. And we'll be back in about 9 minutes, 21 seconds.
Columbus didn't discover America. There were people here already.
That's
a couple
for sure.
Of my boys wouldn't put that down. They were going to school. I had to go up and have a chat with this little principal, and I made him stand on the other side of the desk while I stood on or sat in his chair. Finally, I had to stand up, and I explained to him, I've taught my children not to lie. Now, you're trying to make a liar out of him, and he finally caught the message. I told him, you were working for me, I paid taxes, and so you're going to listen to me, and you're not going to teach my children to lie. And so he made an exception of my boys. But he flunked them.
Well, it seems
got even with them.
It seems to me that the lie of the larger culture is much bigger than who discovered America. It's as if we've lost touch with something very, very fundamental that native peoples such as yourself have kept alive.
Well, they stole most everything. And somebody asked me, what part of America is it that you isn't there any good thing that you like about this country? I said, yes, that's that part that they stole. And it is very true, even though they stole most everything they could get their hands on, our land, children, women, whatever, they took it, and the natural wealth. Left us very poor people, a lot of our people homeless in our own country. But the best things of all, that they had no value, was our way of life. They copied our Constitution from the Iroquois Confederation. That's in the legal code books.
Mm-hmm.
And so that they didn't invent that. They had nothing like it before. But they couldn't live by it because their heart was not, and their thinking was not in that kind of a order to live by something like that. Mm-hmm. And a real freedom and a real peace, they couldn't do it. So they violate it every day by their different interpretations, just like they do their own Bible and different good books. Yeah. And so, and losing these values, they also lost a great deal in how to take care of this land. I like to teach about that. That's our job. We delegate. We don't say we own the land. The grandfather Greek spirit, the one they call God, is the one that owns the land. And so that we are, though, the caretakers of this land. Nobody else can do it. But there's people that can help. And we'd like a lot of people like that that would help. If we try to take your job, we'd make a mess of it. Somebody else's job. It wouldn't be too good because you people have the technology and we're all needed. All of us are needed to work together. And so there won't be any such day as next war of violence. Also that the land could bloom again. And it does in the desert where I live. And I can prove it right now. It looks like a jungle in that area right around my house. And it's green for 100 miles around. On every side, different deserts, real deserts. But in the area where we live, I've seen even what they call weeds. No such thing as a weed, really. I've seen them dance when there was no wind blowing to the sound of our drums and our singing. That's how powerful that is, too. And so that we have rain, and even without the rain, these plants are still green. It's amazing. I come down here sometimes. I see everything dried up sometimes in the past. And one time they was having a drought. And the water commissioners over here in Marion County wrote me a 2-page legal-size type letter and invited me to come down here and get some rain that time. At some years back when it was really drying up down here. And I turned it down. I had a good laugh. You know why? Mm-hmm. They didn't say one word about what this is going to do for me or my people. So we had a good laugh, and then my people did, and I could see it laying in their yards over there. A lot of rusty old pipe. And yet they didn't say one word. We could have used that for irrigation pipe. Put it back together, we could have used it. But it's not for me to beg or to tell them. They never offered my transportation. Even. They didn't say where I was going to stay or how I was going to eat. Those people didn't. Now I know they wouldn't ask anybody else to do anything like that. When they go to their doctors, they pay. You bet they do, handsomely. I didn't ask them for no payment. I don't go begging nowhere. And they can't treat me like that. They want, they want, they want. And they want an old Indian to work for nothing. Some of those politicians are the worst. Let's put it that way. I don't want to talk too much about politicians.
Well, there was a huge thunderstorm here in the San Francisco Bay Area 2 nights ago, which is extremely rare. We never get thunder and lightning. And
some of my good friends been after me. They've been calling me up there. I got many friends throughout the area here. Besides, I like this area. But when my friends ask me for help, that's different from some politician that ain't going to do nothing to appreciate. And yes, I've been dancing as hard as I could, doing a few other things. So it's my brother over there, that old storm god, and that's the way I got my name, for that matter. I used to scream like a little eagle's what they told me, even when I was a baby in diapers, run right out in a storm. Yeah, I love it. And that lightning flash, there's a lot of power in it, I tell you. Mm-hmm. And I know some Indians, I don't like to talk too much about what I can do myself. I tell people I don't do nothing. That's a great spirit's power. But I do have a say-so sometimes, and I can request, you know, what. And if people deserve it, why, they can have it. We like to help, too, in our way of doing things. And I like to, it's beautiful music when that thunder rolls. You can catch some of the water right after the storm. Catch it in pots, pans, any way you can, and drink it. You don't need no nothing to get high with. You don't need anything else. You can feel that energy go all the way through you. I do that sometimes and have my feathers out there making the thunder roll and bringing the lightning down, and then stand right there in the middle of it. I'd look around behind me. Here would be a lot of my family and my people there too, looking up at the show, you know. No, we don't need no heavy artillery, nothing like that. We've got 80,000 more times energy, one bolt of lightning, than there was in the first atomic bomb what they dropped on Japan. Mm-hmm. 80,000 times more.
And that was my teacher, Rolling Thunder. And as a thunder person, dating back to the mid-80s, I really love that old guy. He touched a lot of people. Well, we are back with Bishop Daniel Clay and with Mark the Badger orcharding. And he's he's going to do a Mayan birthday reading for Bishop Clay. So, were you? Oh, Bishop, do you have a favorite animal that you identify with?
I'm not even sure how to answer that.
Well, just wondering. I've got some fun animal sounds on here, like the otter. They're really interesting. They're yeah, you don't want to get those guys started. But anyway, I'll turn Mark loose on you. It'll be really interesting.
Well, so what I'm going to do for you is your reading on your birth. One of the things interesting on your birth is your birth actually is on the exact day that the Mayan Bucktun cycle started 5,000 something years ago. So that's an interesting connection right off the bat. In the traditional Mayan day count, you were born on a day called 12 Khan. And it's in the it's the 12th day of the reed cycle. And the 12 part of 12 Khan relates to a strength of energy, especially when that energy is about spiritual, being a spiritual catalyst, causing a reaction, getting things going. So you may have found that type of energy has been around you probably since birth. Of course, 12 is also the number, like the 12 apostles. Then the Khan part of the 12 Khan, that is something that is about developing things, energy things on a larger scale. And, in the picture of the glyph or symbol, it actually looks, many times people interpret it as a seed, especially a corn seed, being planted into the ground. So now you were earlier mentioning about us moving into the new cycle. So we're going to switch gears here, and we're going to go to one I just did the reading for 12 Khan. That's from the perspective of this cycle. The next part of the reading I'm going to do for you is from the perspective of the next world cycle that we're entering into. And it's going to have three parts to it. Kind of a forward flow of time, a backward flow of time, and then a third part where these two time flows come together and merge into a unity. On the forward flow of time, you were born on a 10-8 symbol. This is interesting because Blue Otter's birth was on a 9-8. So we very often on our guests on the show, I'd say more than 50% of the time we see an eek connection. The eek is glyph is about spirit, prayer, especially when it's about a aspects of pulling things together as one, oneness. It's an important part of this. And so that idea and that thing has probably been with you ever since you were born. The eek symbol looks like a T cross. And if you go all over the Americas, South America, Central America, you'll see this T cross everywhere. And it's considered to be one of the signs of Quetzalcoatl or the Lord of the Wind and the Water. Eek being a sign of a wind. Now on the energy, and this is sitting in eagle cycle, so your animal that we were talking about, Blue Otter, might be eagle, because we're going to see eagle comes up. Eagle and jaguar both, actually. It's a white glyph, so it's a glyph of the north, and brings in the white energy and the skin color of the white, like Chief Rogers was talking about earlier. On the backward flow of time, we have a two eagles sitting here. So there's the eagle again. And this is the energy that you may have seen showing up in your life in the last few years or any time since maybe around 1997, 98, somewhere in there. And it gives you an ability of mind and vision, revelations of things, especially things that have to deal with polarity or polar polarity challenges or magnetics. Things also that deal with supernatural power, ancestors coming up. So ancestral connections and energy from the past is probably something that is there to help guide you in what you're doing. And those will probably connect into your vision of things, being able to see things, and those things, what they reveal, or the revelation of those things to you. It's sitting in the jaguar cycle, so it brings in the jaguar energy. And jaguar in the Mexican and South American all the way through there was one of the most powerful animals. It's one of the totem animals that takes you through the underworld. And it is the thing that moves the sun from one world cycle to the next. As it moves into the underworld and this sun dies and a new sun or the new world cycle begins, it's really a jaguar strength and energy that help is guiding or working with that. So that again is some pretty good. You got eagle and jaguar.
Interesting. There he is.
You may know this, but down in that area of the world, the eagle and the jaguar were the two main things. So you got both of them showing up here. Where these two come together, you have another 12 showing up, and it's a 12 piece. And it's about devotion in existing in reality, but also teaching child likeness and childlikeness attitudes of peace, hope, community, cooperation of community. But along with that, the will, purpose, and discipline showing up for that cooperation. So you got all that, of course, leading back to the aspect of peace here. So that is the thing that's probably driving you right now in terms of moving from one world cycle to the next. The key words would be peace, devotion, hope, community, purpose, discipline, and beauty of creation. And the thing about oneness is showing up here again in an even larger cycle. So those are things I would say that are pretty much a big driving factor probably in your life right now. And it's also the thing that's going to help you, yourself, moving between from this world to the next world. That's also your doorway or bridge or gateway to move through. So the more you go into alignment with that, the more ease you have in doing that movement. And essentially it's what your it's your part of your purpose. Some of these readings, what I tell them, it's kind of like you think of this as a song that's being sung by Creator. And so what we're doing here, we're getting a glimpse into the song. And what we're doing is converting your birthday into a musical note position within the song. And at that point in the song is singing about something. And what I've just described to you is what it is singing about. The peace, the hope, childlikeness, purpose, discipline, beauty of creation, and oneness. That's where you were born in the song. So that tells us kind of what you do. What creators essentially wants you to do. So does that make sense?
Very interesting. I should say a little more than interesting. You've hit things very dead on. The reason I did not want to give the earlier answer, because it sounds kind of silly, sounds trite when you even mention eagles, but I do know what you're talking about, and they've made themselves present to me, flying down within arm's reach occasionally. Nothing more beautiful than a fully splayed eagle with its talons out within arm's reach of your face. It's just a gorgeous sight. But yes, everything that you have said is very accurate.
Yeah, he's something else, isn't he? Yeah, Mark?
Yes.
He's interesting. Interesting fella. Well?
Well, it's really not me. It's just what I've been given because, like I said, this is essentially what I'm reading, did the reading for you on the second part of the reading with four backward and unity. That is a new, or not new, but it's a grown. It's expanded or grown Mayan Zolk'in. And it seems to... The current Mayan Zolk'in is pretty interesting, but this new one seems to be even more able to see things with it. So it's not really me, it's just I'm using what I was given to try to maybe help other people. And usually what I find is only reflecting back to them usually the path they're already on. And most of the people on the show are already doing a pretty good job, so it matches up pretty good.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, feel free to tell people about your book, Bishop, because, like I said at the beginning of the show, I had no idea that you'd ever written one. But I mean, this thing. Well, one of the reviews in it, you know, compares you to Michel de Nostradam, and I got to say that's a lot of what it reads like, and it's really not surprising because in Amos it says, "Surely the Lord God will do nothing." Well, that he reveals it to his servants, the prophets. The servant being operative word, and it's a burden. You know, what little I've been trusted to reveal, it could be kind of scary. So tell people about what you do in that realm or whatever. You know, we've got another half hour, and just open your heart.
Well, I would actually like to address a couple of different things, and I do appreciate the chance to mention the book, which is simply titled The Prophecies. It is available in hard form, or was. I assume it probably is still available, and is available as an e-book as well, as are several of the other books that I have written. But the whole concept that we were talking about earlier about children, I feel like that we need to touch on that just a little bit more, because What we have failed to mention here in the conversation about children is the fact that the children who will save the world, it's been talked about by a lot of the Native American prophecies that these are the children of the Native Americans. But what most people fail to realize is that any family that has been here for maybe two generations at least, but has married into other families that have been here, almost without exception, every family has Native American blood in it. So the children of the Native American heritage really is just about all of America, except for maybe the immigrants that have come in within the last two generations. So when we start talking about children and the prophecies that were made about the children, we are looking at the generation that is coming up making a real difference in the world if we give them the tools to do it.
Well, one thing you may not know is since about 1600, well, let's see, 1650 or 1700, all the royal houses of Europe have been descendants of Pocahontas because of intermarriage. So, you know, it's interesting the way the seeds have been moved around.
It is extremely interesting. People don't realize how interrelated everyone and everything is. And of course, people don't really realize the oneness of existence to start with. But even just on a more mundane scale, few people realize how interrelated the various communities are, and that we're just all one big people on this little marble.
Yeah. Yeah, things change when that picture was taken from outer space.
It sure did. And right now we are in such a quandary as to what direction to go in politics. And I say this not as a part of politics or as being a part of one side or other, but I'm saying this as a global political, because all of the different countries are in crisis. And it seems like because they have deserted the spiritual paths, nobody knows where to go to fix things. And there are some very simple answers, but everybody is looking for something very complicated that will bring them some kind of a special profit or advantage over everyone else. And we've as a world, got to get beyond that and start thinking about the children of tomorrow.
Well, it was really awkward for me, you know, because I was brought up basically as an arch conservative, became libertarian, and when all this stuff starts happening with these children coming up from Central America, I'm going, oh, there's the Hopi prophecy being fulfilled, and of course, you know, there's evil ones coming up with them, but you know, I held my peace until somebody pointed out that you know, even Brigham Young said it. He said when they come, he says there'll be like a grand march of angels. And, you know, what better description, you know, in human form for a child is an angel. And but, you know, I can't go to my Tea Party friends and point that out, or they'll point the finger at me and, you know, but what I've learned in my 60 years in politics is that I am glad, notwithstanding what George Washington, how he felt about two-party system, I'm glad that there is a two-party system, that there is a pendulum that goes back and forth, because each side tends to bring good things and bad things. Like Nixon was one of the best things ever happened to Indians, but, you know, probably the worst thing ever happened for health care and other things. But, you know, there's things that Obama's doing right and wrong, and somewhere in all of this mix we have to arrive somewhere, and that's the trick.
To paraphrase Thomas Jefferson, there are two people from which the Americans need to be able to protect themselves, and those are criminals and the government, which, if allowed, will become organized criminals. The whole idea that the government's just going to work on its own, I think, is probably the misconception that most Americans have, and they are willing to blame the government, yet such a low percentage of Americans are willing to go out and vote. Such a low percentage of Americans are really willing to participate in the system. They are willing to complain about the system, but they're not willing to be part of it. And truly, when you look at the nations through the world, including America, the leaders they have are actually a reflection of their consciousness.
Amen.
It is a reflection of their place in thought, their way of doing things, their own greed, their own lust for or apathy. So when people start blaming leaders, they're blaming themselves, because these leaders as a whole are a reflection of the overall collective consciousness of the people they represent. They are actually the mediocre reflection. They're a reflection of mediocrity of the people they represent.
Amen. That's so true.
You know, yeah. You had asked if I would speak a little bit about the books that we've written and the prophecies that we wrote. And by the way, if people want to find these books, they can go to the ministry website, which is orderofthemysticalrose.org. And if you misspell it, or if you put in words that don't belong there, you'll end up someplace else. But out of these books, there was one that was a collection of stories. And they were actually written for adults, as if they were being written for children. And they're parables and fables. But and originally they were published in a pocket size edition. Now they're in an electronic edition, which you can sit beside the bed and read to your children. But I would encourage parents to do this, because children are so terribly important. And besides, this is not only going to help the children with things they already know, it's probably going to teach the parents the things they don't know that the children would like them to know.
Yeah, right.
So.
That's a good thing, particularly today.
It is. The children are often far ahead of the parents. The parents once knew the things the children now know, but they have dulled themselves to the point that they no longer remember the things their children now know.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's like when I was 6 years old, you know, my parents put me into, Minneapolis, 1960, and put me in a Lutheran school, and that didn't last long, because I came home and I was telling them all the stuff they shouldn't do, you know, and spouting Bible verses. But, you know, the thing my parents didn't realize is they set themselves up for this. My sister was born in 42, and dad was working for Boeing at Wichita, and he was too skinny. They wouldn't take him in the military. His brother was in the Naval Academy at that time. But he was working for Boeing, and he was a stress analyst. And they asked him to accompany the prototype for the magnesium nose casting for the B-29 bomber to Wright-Patterson to be X-ray inspected. And while he was there, the technician didn't tell him to get out of the X-ray field. And he says, "Oh, I'm sorry, Mac, but you're probably going to be sterile." So they weren't expecting another child. So the story goes, they prayed. No, you know, they wanted a son. So finally, they figured, "Oh, we're going to make a bargain with the Lord." They said, "Oh, Lord, give us a boy, and we'll give him back to you." Well, that's but they didn't mean it. They didn't mean it. And, oh, my gosh, they were in for big trouble because they, I mean, you just don't do that and not expect trouble, especially if you want that kid to go into business and not do something spiritual. So, oh, man, it was, well, so anyway, yep.
There is a fine line anyway, and then I'm not saying this of your parents, but it does bear saying, you don't bargain with God. But there's a fine line between religion and belief and faith and magic. And most people don't really realize that line, that when you pray or meditate, you are praying or meditating to align yourself with God, to align yourself with the divine will. The moment that you begin praying to convince God to do what you want or to force the divine flow to go where you want rather than to channel that divine flow through you as it is meant to be, you're practicing magic.
Yep.
And unfortunately, so few people realize this, that there are a huge percent of churches, all denominations, where the people talk about witchcraft and magic and how evil it is, and then they spend their worship service practicing magic rather than worshiping God or bringing themselves into a line with God's will.
Oh, my gosh. This morning, I audit a lot of Yahoo groups, and one of them is the End Time Discernment. And some of these people are really right-wing Christians, and they're really not Christians at all, and really anti-Semitic. So I audited a whole bunch of websites, talking about how Christians are pretty much, in name only, a lot of them. And one of the things I ran across was a video from of Christians going to Wall Street and literally laying their hands on the bull and saying, bring back the good economy. And I used to watch current TV on what's now Al Jazeera. And of course, I watch Fox and I watch both sides. The moderator was just going crazy. He says, "Oh my gosh!" He says, "It's all through the Bible." And here's these Christians. They're praying to a golden calf. What is wrong with this picture? It's on YouTube.
Some of the things that we see and hear today are just so crazy. Just a few days ago, all over the internet was some Christian minister, and I will use Christian in quotes, saying that if God created aliens, they could not be saved because Christ, the Lord Jesus, didn't die for them. Well, forgive me, but the Apostle Paul said all things would return to God. And I'm absolutely certain that if there are aliens out there, and I will not get anybody excited by saying there are or aren't, but I am certain if they are, that they're God's creation, and as part of that, they're blessed, and they will return to God.
Well, the Cherokee Nation United Ketubah Elder John Red Hat Duke, who, was a very spiritual man, and he became a reformed rabbi, he said, hey, anything, any being that's capable of love, will find its way back to the Creator sooner or later.
Yes, there is no room either for the anti-Semitism that exists, because when Christ was hanging upon the cross, he said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." But the very fact that the founder of the Christian faith asked for them to be forgiven means that they were, and that it there is no place within our faith to claim that Christianity has a right to judge them, because that was thrown out the window right there.
Right. Good point. Good point. And you know, I know John Paul II, during his reign, I became aware that they started, bringing in rabbis into Catholic schools, and recognizing that, hey, they've got their covenant, we've got ours, theirs is still active, so is ours. And he himself, a lot of the rabbis of Jerusalem, recognized him as a Jew, because he was, his mother was a Jew, and so that, there's been movements in the right direction. I hope they keep going.
Ultimately, they have to keep going, because we're one people, and we can only survive in this world if we continue to unify as one people. If you look out at the planets, just look out at them, and you see these pockmarked balls, and you think of creation and you say to yourself, well, if everything was created perfect, how did we end up here? Where did we go so wrong that we left this stream of pockmarked balls behind us getting here?
Yeah, that's
and
a good
that
point.
Just
yeah.
Brings the question of, well, maybe we've always been pretty violent and warring lot.
Well, that's the sad part. It really is. But yeah, we gotta move forward. Indians. It's a real phenomenon. I think Mark will agree. When the last real Indians are the people that are coming up here on trains. A lot of people here in this country, particularly Cherokees, for 100 years, we didn't know who we were. We were, more into the 60s, according to one of the Ottawahees that taught me. Says back then, everybody in Oklahoma, they were more interested in being Cheyenne. And he was taught by Elmer Castile, who was the last Ottawahee. But being Cherokee wasn't exciting and glamorous as, being a Cheyenne. And so we basically really forgot who we are. But now we have a lot of people, particularly since the American Indian Movement, when it ceased becoming a spiritual thing that was founded by Medgar Anderson and started being a political thing and really a racist thing in a lot of ways. If your hair is not long and you're not dark-skinned and, what I'm talking about. But we have a lot of people who exhibit this behavior when I was a family teacher at Boys Town, we would have called it pointing out negative differences. Rather than following their own spiritual leaders, which are telling them, hey, we're all related. It's time to grow together now, like Arvel Looking Horse says. We need to forgive each other and grow together. But it seems like people, as they're coming in, they immediately identify with the bad things of the past and the hatreds and the massacres. And then eventually we hope they move through that and get into lodges and start thinking about spiritual things and forgiving each other. But while they're in that mode of being negative, they point the finger at us and say, you're not Indians. It's wild.
You find that in so many different circles. Now, while you're talking about, some are Indian coming up, too, I've talked to other individuals who I have assumed were Native American, and they correct me saying, no, I'm direct bloodline. My great-great-great-grandfather was a Spaniard. I'm direct male bloodline from Spain. That does not mean they don't have Native American blood, but the fact is they want to identify with a different heritage. Now, that's all well and fine, but the question is, what have we done that makes it so difficult for people to say, I am this heritage, this heritage, this heritage, and this heritage? Why do they want to hide part of what they are? Or what negative connotations? Why have they seen the divisions rather than the unity of it? You cut yourself, you bleed the same color regardless of what race you think you are. And how you dress, well, you know, we live in this era. We dress like people dress in this era. It doesn't matter, and you get the same thing, you know, amongst the Catholics, you know, should the person be in a robe? Should they wear a collar? Oh, you know, will they insult people? Maybe they should be in a necktie and jacket. Is it better to do this? No, it doesn't matter. Be happy. It isn't about what you wear. It isn't about how long or short your beard is. There's some face where, you know, they're fussing about how long the hair is or how long the beard is or if you wear your hat right. No, no, no. Dreadlocks, it doesn't matter. We're all just God's children, and the way you dress is not going to make you more spiritual. You can put lipstick on a pig, but it's still a pig.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, you know,
getting political.
yeah, exactly. And, you know, it really is about politics because it's so easy to fall in with people that they want to control you and what you're thinking, because they want your money. And
yeah,
that's what it comes down to.
Turn it into a business.
Oh yeah.
Roots and stuff where people should be. So one of the things when I visited one of the Hopi elders, he pointed out it was an old Aztec, Toltec type codex, and it had some different world cycles on it. Had four of them on there, and they had these guys sitting there on the ground. And when you got to our, there was a difference, though, and that was in the three previous world cycles, underneath these guys there was a little symbol. But in the fourth world, our world, that was missing. And this old Hopi elder, he pointed underneath the guy's butt, and he says, look, no roots. He doesn't have roots. Now, what's interesting about it, what he's trying to say is, you know, people don't know where they came from. They don't know the roots, and they should be proud of that, and it's part of them. Their ancestry and where they've been and where their ancestors, that's actually part of them. It moves from generation to generation, good or bad. But what is also interesting about this picture was when you went back to the first world, it had an image of, like, Creator sitting there, and he also had roots. And it was everything. So when you read this, you could see eventually all the roots of everybody and all their traditions and stuff, they all moved back and were connecting into the roots of Creator.
I hate to break up this party. We only got a minute left, and we're going to get back together real soon. Why don't we count on, you know, another month or so? Let's do this again. And we can continue from there. But they only give us 2 hours, and we got about 40 seconds left. So let's leave it at that, okay?
This has been fabulous. Thank you very much.
You're so welcome, and we look forward to doing it again. Okay. Good night, everybody. Talk to you again soon. Good night.
Join us to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Friends, this is your co-host, Will Blue Otter. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. Aten omakiyayo miyanam hene, aten omichimu miyanam hene.